Welcome to Small Business Insights, where back office conversations give us insight to what's really going on. Is it grit or luck that gives a small business owner an advantage? Let's find out. I'm your host, Laura Fisher. All right. Well, today in the studio, I have a special guest. It's Stephen Bates, but he goes by Chuck, and he's from Stegent Equity Advisors. Chuck, say hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
All right. This is his first time in the studio, so I wish y'all could see him. He's a good-looking man. You'll see a picture in the artwork and social media, but he's got some special interest when it comes to financial planning. But before we get into that, Chuck, tell me how you got here.
Sure. So I'm a military brat. I grew up overseas. My dad was in the Air Force. I ultimately went to the University of Nebraska. After that, I've worked.
Aren't you supposed to say something after that?
Go Big Red.
Okay, there you go.
It's especially painful today because our head coach was fired yesterday.
Oh, my.
So I was getting.
For due cause or just. Were they losing?
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but yeah, it's probably definitely warranted.
All right. So I'm sorry. Usually when somebody says they're from Nebraska, they usually have something to say afterwards.
Yeah, I'm a little sad today.
Okay.
So I work for Stegent Equity Advisors. I've been there about 2 years. I started into this path after 16 years at a big asset management firm here in Houston that allowed me to be exposed to a huge number of nonprofit companies. Bridgeway gave 50% of their profits to charity. And through that process, it led to my wife and I becoming foster parents and adoptive parents. And in that process, I learned that if a child has spent time in the foster care system, they get free tuition or tuition waivers to any public university in the state of Texas. And it was very curious to me. I was like, if I didn't know that, what else don't I know?
Yeah.
Started to study that and found out I could make a entrepreneurial career out of it.
Out of what? Helping folks find career money?
Helping.
Or college money?
Yes, ma'am. Helping college-bound families save, learn about how the financial aid system works, determine what kind of student or unique situation they have. And if you keep an open mind about your school list and where you want to go, there's a lot of money out there, and most families can save somewhere between $2,000 and $20,000 a year.
Wow. So are you talking about a student that has academics, excellence, or just talking about, you said foster care, that's kind of an anomaly? I mean, how do you find out these things? You go to you? Or what do you
exactly
find out?
So I started by dissecting the federal financial aid formula. It comes out once a year, and there's a lot of inputs that go into it. Examples would be, and they'd apply very much to you and your audience, if you're a small business owner and you have more than 100 employees, they'll assess the value of your business before they give you financial aid. If you have less than 100 employees, they don't assess the value of your business. So like in a case like that, a business with a modest net income of $100,000 could technically be valued up to, you know, close to $1 million, and that would dramatically impact the amount of student aid you might be eligible or based on your business not eligible for.
Well, I don't like the news of that. What other kind of surprises are out there?
Divorce families.
Right.
If you're divorced and your student lives with a parent that has the lower income 51% of the time, some schools only assess that parent's income for financial purposes. Other schools will assess both parents, and some schools will assess both parents, and if they've remarried, the additional parents.
And so that's where you're saying you kind of know what institutions to go to and what rules. So how do you get your knowledge on things like that?
I've been lucky to meet a number of mentors in the field. There's software out there that can help with it. So you just continue to study, you learn the formulas, you dig into the how each school's business model works.
Right.
Rice, for example, they don't necessarily give a lot of merit scholarships for great academic grades, but if you're a good enough student to get accepted there and you have a low income, they meet nearly 100% of your need with aid and grants. So that means money you don't have to pay back, where a lot of other schools, they may meet a smaller percentage, and then of that smaller percentage, it will be a combination of grants and loans. So you're, in addition to not covering the full amount, you're borrowing money that you'll have to pay back at a later date.
All right. So as a financial planner, when do you start with a family? Is it when my child is born? Like I set up the college savings account when they're 6 months old. Is that how soon you start, or when do you really start?
that is the best time to start saving for sure. There's what, 218 months from the time a child is born until they leave.
Oh my gosh, you already have them numbered.
For college. And if you think about what it costs to go to college right now, it's about $30,000 a year. So $120,000 for 4 years. If you divide that number out, you're looking at $500 to $600 a month. And it's unrealistic for a lot of families to save that much. Wow. And if you have two or three or four kids, it grows exponentially.
Right. And how are scholarships easy to find? I know for, I was disillusioned. I will tell you this. I have four children. One of my children graduated in the top 10% of his class, only missed one math question on the SAT. Okay. So he got automatically accepted into Texas A&M, but a very nominal, like $1,000 scholarship. Right. That was it.
Yeah. So in Texas and California, those two states especially, there's such demand to get into the in-state schools that they're not necessarily very generous with either need or merit-based aid, right? There's, you know, they accept maybe 8,000 incoming freshmen a year, give or take. And if you just think about the top 10%, or now it's down to top 6%, you know, there's more than enough students to fill their entire demand. Where a
that's
lot of
true.
Other schools don't have that same challenge.
So that's when I come to you or a college planner saying, I got this exceptional student, but I don't have the money to put him in there. He's got his eyes set on Texas A&M. Can you help him, what, steer in a different direction? Is that what you do?
So we would look at the student's grades and test scores, and about 85% of all scholarship dollars come from the institutions themselves. And it's kind of the middle of the road private schools that are most generous with academic based financial aid.
Not state schools.
Exactly.
Okay. But then I think, oh, I can't afford that because it's a private school.
Right. Their sticker prices are typically more expensive, and parents get discouraged or scared off by that. But the reality is the net cost after the merit-based scholarships almost always bring those closer to in line with the state schools. That's their bogey, these private schools. They realize that's who they're competing against. And a lot of them want to bring in better academic students to bring up the kind of standings or rankings. I'm sure everybody's seen Money or Forbes or all these different rankings. And by bringing in better test scores and grade point averages from out of state, their freshman class typically looks better. And they use that merit-based aid as an incentive to bring down the cost and get the best students.
Now, as a financial planner, you know, I know you're going to encourage us to start saving. Are there all kinds of saving packages and different ways to do it? Programs? I know Texas has some. I'm sure they're in other states. And then, like, I have another son who I've saved all this money up, but he's not going to college. What do I do with all that money?
So, all great questions. There's a lot of choices. I have a son who has some challenges, and college may not be in his future. We saved via a UTMA account for him. It's just an investment account that is in the child's name, and that money's has to be used for his benefit. And my goal with him is, you know, maybe he'll become a welder or an HVAC engineer or something, and he can use that to start a business, right? We're both entrepreneurs. Right. We value that. And, you know, he may have to go through an apprenticeship, but eventually he can be a business owner, and that would be my goal. 529 plans are very flexible. If you fund that and name a beneficiary and not all the money's used, or a student does not go to college, you can change the beneficiary to another child, or even a niece or nephew or grandchild.
But it has to go towards education.
It has to go to education.
Does it have to stay within the state?
No.
Okay.
There's no requirements around that. And that money can be withdrawn, but there could be financial penalties.
Well, that's the case for anything.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like it's gone forever. And as you age, there's something called an ABLE account it can be converted to, which helps with medical and other expenses in old age.
Okay. So tell me about the firm you work for. What kind of clients do you have overall? I'm sure you do more than collegiate planning and all that. So tell me a little bit more about your firm.
Sure. Stegen Equity Advisors was founded by Lloyd Stegen about 25 years ago. We manage assets for about 100 families, $200 million, give or take. We provide tax planning, tax services, investment management, financial planning, retirement planning, small business assistance. So kind of comprehensive financial planning, depending on where our clients are, and we do our best to meet them where they're at.
And how many financial planners are in your office?
There's three employees in the office, two CFPs and myself, and we work together as a team to provide those services.
Well, that sounds like a nice manageable shop. Like I could call you and talk to somebody.
You'll get somebody on the phone every time. That's a promise.
That's good. All right. So, you and I have been talking about this NIL, and it's name, image, and likeness for athletes in the college level. So tell us what that means, and then after the break, we'll go a little bit more into it.
Sure. It's a relatively new development, a little over a year ago. Most of the states, there's 29 by my count recently, that have passed laws saying that student athletes are now allowed to profit from their name, image, and likeness because of all the attention they bring to a university. In some cases, it can be very, very profitable or lucrative, and it provides opportunities for student athletes that they didn't have prior to this, where they were very restricted by the NCAA rules on where and how they could earn money, which was basically because the NCAA was saying, you know, if you give them these additional benefits, it's illegal and you'll get unfair advantage and on the sporting field.
Yeah, it looks like you're bribing or payola or some favoritism and
exactly
all that good stuff. And I'm sure that has existed.
Oh, for sure. But yeah. But there's also been, you know, great instances. I think, you know, like Michael Orr of the Blind Side, you know, there is a big kind of concern that they adopted him just to play football at Ole Miss. And
that's right. That was implied in the movie. That's a great movie.
It was a good movie.
It was. But a college athlete is at a disadvantage because it takes a lot to be an athlete. It takes a lot to go through college and do both. And then they're not allowed to have a job or some kind of outside revenue. How's that work out?
Yeah. Previous to the change, there were very high restrictions about when they could work, what kind of job, how they could get paid. And it was very difficult for a lot of them. Although they did receive a stipend, typically it was not very much, typically less than $300 a month, I believe, in most cases. Mm-hmm. And that's not much to take a friend on a date or go out to dinner, or in some cases even travel to see friends or family.
All right, just buy some clothes.
Exactly. It's the things we take for granted.
Yeah, those entertainment dollars, those are pretty important in college, too.
They are.
All right, so when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what the NIL, why it came about, and maybe if you have a young athlete, what you need to be looking for and planning for as they go into college. All right?
Sounds great.
All right, we'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Thank you for listening to Small Business Insights. Today's show is sponsored by Keffi Spaces, new location in Houston. Air-conditioned warehouse units with loading docks, carrier services, fulfillment, break room, free Wi-Fi. The perfect place to grow your e-commerce business. Keffi Spaces, located in the Design District of Houston. And now back to Small Business Insights.
All right, I'm back with Chuck Bates from Stegent Equity Advisors, and we're talking about the NIL, the name, image, and likeness program that's going on. I don't even know what you call it.
Throughout the country.
Yeah.
Almost half our states, or more than half our states, now have laws that make it acceptable.
So I'm here, you know, our show here, we recorded in Houston, and I'm familiar with the Aggies, right? And so I remember when Johnny Manziel was really big, and was he the Heisman Trophy winner?
He is a Heisman Trophy winner.
Okay. And we were going berserk about him because he was so unpredictable and so fun to watch. He made football fun to watch. But they had shirts, Texas A&M shirts with his number on it, but he wasn't getting any royalties off of that. Is that right?
At least not legally.
Okay. So we'll say no.
Correct.
All right. So that's changed. That's what this is about. Because when somebody is benefiting off of my name and likeness and image, that's me. I'm the product. And here the institution was selling it and benefiting from it. And someone said, no, that's wrong.
Exactly.
Okay. So tell us a little bit of history about that.
So I think, and this is just my opinion, I think it goes all the way back to 2009. There was a famous basketball player named Ed O'Bannon at the University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA. And there was a quarterback at Arizona State and ultimately Nebraska, where I went, that were part of a class action lawsuit, basically saying it's unfair that the NCAA profits from my name, image, and likeness, and I don't see any of that share of revenue.
Yeah, and they're already limiting them on any kind of revenue. They're probably feeling hungry and whatever, you know, taken advantage of.
And these student athletes bring a lot of eyes to not only their program, but
donations.
And, you know, if you look at the most recent Big Ten media rights deal, it was $7 billion over 7 years. That's $1 billion a year.
That's going to the schools.
That's divided to the schools.
And the schools are dividing that however they want to.
Yeah, they get their portion and can use it as they see fit. Okay. And it's not going to the student athletes.
It's always about money. Let's just break it down to that. All right, so let's back to the student who is who's creating a sensation.
Yep.
All right. And they can't tell us where they are.
So they can now they can be a sponsor, or they can advertise for companies. They can.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they can do autographs. They can have T-shirts created for them. One of my favorite ones, and I apologize, I don't know the young lady's name, but during the NCAA basketball tournament, a basketball got shot up on top of the hoop and got stuck near the timer clock at the very top.
Right.
And they couldn't reach it. And they, you know, first they were trying to poke it with a broom and different things, and then eventually two of the cheerleaders, one male and one female, went over there, and the male lifted up the female, and she got the ball, and the game went on.
Right.
And they made a T-shirt about that, and she was able to claim some of the profits. And that's a neat, kind of unexpected way where somebody was able to profit from being the face of that moment in time.
Okay. All right. So how are they managing this?
Well, each school is required to or not required, but typically has a program that they provide kind of financial literacy and education. Then there's the collective. So this would be a group of fans that kind of pools their money and allows the athletes to get paid from the money, but uses them, whether it's on social media, to advertise or market certain things.
Well, I know when I used to work at A&M way back when, and if you were going to use their logo, you had to go through a licensing department. So are they going to have the same thing for student athletes?
Student athletes cannot use their logo or uniform when they're doing outside activities currently.
Okay.
So that's one of the things they can't do, and it could get them in trouble with compliance and the state law. And that's one of my biggest concerns, to be honest, is do the student athletes know what they can and can't do? Do the businesses that are paying them know what they can and can't do? And if a business is maybe less scrupulous, could they, you know, intentionally get a player in trouble or unintentionally? You know, we just want the best outcomes for everybody. So the more we can educate both the businesses and the student athletes about what is approved and not approved is pretty important.
Well, yeah. And if I'm a student athlete, I'm not going to have the business savvy to approve or disapprove who's using my likeness.
Yeah. It's funny you bring that up, because they took a survey recently of student athletes, and over 50% said they wanted more training and education around the financial and legal ramifications of being involved in NIL.
So this is a new frontier.
It really is. It's happening on the fly. It's like building an airplane in the sky almost.
So where do you see your part as a financial advisor? Where do you see the education begin, and how can you walk a new athlete through that?
Really, it's just intellectual property and research. The first thing I'd say is the laws in the state you went to high school probably aren't going to be the same as the state you're going to college in, assuming you go out of state.
Right.
If you stay in state, it's one thing. But in a lot of cases, those laws and rules are different. The most striking one to me in Texas is that high school athletes are not allowed to profit from NIL. So we had an example of that with a young student athlete from Dallas-Fort Worth. He was a highly regarded quarterback recruit, and he left the state before high school was finished and went to college in a state where that was acceptable.
Is that why he left?
I don't know him personally, but a lot of people have speculated that that's the case.
And so what was the consequence?
He went there and was able to immediately start getting NIL deals. He stayed there for a year, and lo and behold, he transferred back to UT, started as their starting quarterback this weekend, and was injured. But, you know, so he left the state that it wasn't allowed in, went to another state, probably made some money, but we don't really know, and is back as the starting quarterback at UT.
Okay, let's talk about injury. So what are the consequences if they don't get to fulfill their year of playing and the expectations of the advertisers not met?
That's a great question, and it's one of the biggest concerns I have. You know, what if they don't meet their obligations as a student? What are the consequences? How do they go about that? Or if, on the other flip side of that coin, if a student does everything they do and the business doesn't meet their obligations,
right?
How can the student, you know, become whole, if you will?
Right. It sounds like there's going to be a whole new industry of NIL agents.
You're definitely starting to see them, and that's one of the best things with most of the state rules, like especially in Texas and most of the other states. The students are now allowed to have professional representation, and I think that's one of the most important things for them. It will help.
They weren't able to do that as well. That's part of it.
Yeah, before you would lose your eligibility.
So if I was Johnny Manziel, or a high performing athlete in college, I wasn't allowed to have an agent.
Correct. You would lose your NCAA eligibility. They consider that becoming a professional, basically.
So I guess they just call them a friend, right? And you can't. There's not supposed to be any connections or ties or strings or anything attached.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of.
That's a lot of promises. I mean, how does a young man or a young woman know that friend is going to be credible?
Well, in theory, they're not even supposed to have contact with them until they've graduated and fulfilled their eligibility.
In theory, but yeah. We know it happens.
You would think so. And they don't. And I think that's why, you know, some athletes probably were taken advantage of. A lot of it depends on their family and the connections they have. Have they been through some of those things before? You know, a lot of these athletes are second generation. Their parents played in college in some of the same sports.
Wow. It sounds like an opportunity, and it also sounds like a big mess as far as administration of it.
Yeah, and, you know, at the University of Nebraska, where I'm most familiar with, there's a gentleman who left the football program to create a business, athlete branding and marketing, and that's specifically what he does. He's an agent now and helps provide the legal, compliance, financial, accounting, tax advice to these students as they get deals.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. And they have to be good at it. I mean, an exceptional athlete. I have quite a checkered past, but one of them was, I got my degree in music business, and I learned there that I like the back office side. I'm a musician, but I like the back office business side of it. And when you let the athlete or the performer do their thing, you don't have them worry about the back office thing, so they can concentrate on their craft. And that could be very distracting. I mean, I know in college when I was at A&M and advising those college students, boyfriends and girlfriends can just be a huge distraction. I can't imagine financial deals and expectations and having an advertiser say, hey, you didn't perform like I wanted you to Saturday. I'm going to back out of this deal. I mean, I'm sure that kind of stuff is going to happen.
That could happen. And my concern is, you know, some of these deals are not cash deals. So maybe you get an apartment and you do social media appearances, or you get a car and you get to drive it for a year. But all of those things are considered alternative compensation. And the IRS may be looking at these deals to make sure they're getting their fair share of the taxes.
Absolutely.
An expensive car, driving that for a year, could generate a tax burden between $5,000 and $13,000, depending on how long you drive the car and the value of it.
And they wouldn't even thought about it. Hey, I'm just driving a sexy new car.
Exactly.
Ouch. That would be tough. So that's where you're going to come in.
I'd like to make them aware of those things, understand the difference if they're a W-2 employee, which as an entrepreneur, I'm sure you understand. You know, you get paid a salary. You're withholding, everything's taken out, or are you a 1099 contractor where you're responsible for those taxes, Social Security, different things like that? And if you are, that can be a big surprise at the end of the year when that tax burden comes due, or you get, you know, a bunch of 1099s for just over $400 each or $500 each yeah. that you have to be responsible for.
Wow. Okay. So if my listeners are interested in talking to you some more and learning more about this for their loved ones, or maybe figuring out how to make it into a career themselves. And I know you're going to be growing your career in this area. So tell us how to reach you.
You can reach me via email, chuck@stegeandequity.com. That's by far the best way.
I'll have that in the show notes. And how about, are you on LinkedIn?
I'm on LinkedIn. I don't know my profile
That's
name.
That's all right. I'll put that in there.
And I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter, and we also have a Facebook page.
All right. Well, I find it fascinating, and I think we need to revisit this as it goes along, because I don't know that it actually impacts the small business community, but it's just business, and those are baby entrepreneurs right there trying to do something with their talents. And for that matter, it does matter to keep people informed.
Absolutely. They're all entrepreneurs, and it's ongoing financial literacy. Those are things that will make life better for everybody. The more entrepreneurs in the world, the better off we're going to be.
I think so, here in America. All right. Well, thank you so much, Chuck, for stopping by. And I look forward to seeing how your career grows in this specific field.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Until next time, you better be up to something. Thanks for joining us this week on Small Business Insights. Make sure you visit our website at fisherpodcast.com, where you can follow the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform, so you'll never miss a show. If you enjoyed and found value in today's episode, we'd appreciate a rating and review on iTunes, or simply share it with a friend. That would help us out too. Make sure you tune in next week for our next episode. Until then, you better be up to something.